This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Speaking truth to power involves personal, political, and social complexities. And often speaking up about injustice means taking a risk for yourself. Today, I'm joined by two activists who are speaking truth to power in their own ways and also facing the consequences that come with it. Joining me are Anna Ha. She is the co-founder and executive director of the Freedom Film Network, and she's also the festival director of the Freedom Film Festival. And also Sharon Wah, who is the co-founder of Missy Solidarity, which is a youth-led collective. And I'm going to find out more about the work that they do and find out how they are supporting freedom of expression and the values contained in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in their own way. Welcome, ladies. How are you today?
Good.
We're good. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolute pleasure. I guess let's address the elephant in the room. Both of you were called in for questioning quite recently regarding a film, but we're going to talk about that later. But first, you know, Anna, you've been on BFM many times before. You know, we do have a lot of collaboration with, you know, Freedom Film Festival, Freedom Film Network, all the things, all the work that you do. But tell me, how did you first get interested in filmmaking?
I would say it's by accident, almost. I was a fan of Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. I think Sharon won't know about this film, do you?
I know.
So I like, oh, I wish I could be an archaeologist or, you know, and study about Egypt, etc., you know. And of course, there was no course like that here, you know. So I did the next best thing, which was film and anthropology.
Not archaeology, but anthropology.
You know, that's what you just take what you are being offered, lah, you know. And then that's how I got into film. I studied film, but where I studied film, they didn't actually teach so much about producing films, but you studied about the film industry. And how the media industry actually is a kind of the producers of a kind of ideology that maintains status quo, and it's kind of like messages that maintain people who are in power. And so by the time I finished my studies, I just thought that no, I have to then balance out that that equation, which is I would just have to make films about the other side, you know, alternative messages and carrying different people's voices. It's very idealistic, but I think that's been what I've been doing for the past 20, 30 years, which is just kind of using films because that's supposed to be my expertise, right? And trying to innovate how to use media for human rights and to kind of tell stories that are not out there. Yeah.
And as you mentioned, Anna, you know, 20 to 30 years you've been doing this, and you know, for I think almost the last 20 years, you know, you've been working on the Freedom Film Festival, right? Tell me how that was founded in the first place, and how would you say it's evolved over the years?
Okay, like I said, you know, when I first came out of uni, we tried to like use films for activism, so we did a lot of documentation of evictions, you know, working with the indigenous people. And then after that, we didn't have many places to show. That time was really, the internet hasn't, you know, come out, you know. It was really pre-internet days. Sorry, Sharon, I'm old, yes. But yeah, so we're like, okay, what shall we do to be able to spread our message, you know, and show our films, you know. And we say, okay, lah, just call it a festival, lah. You know, an event where people can meet, you know. It's really DIY. We've never been to a, like, real international film festival. But we just like to use the word, lah. It's just a way to gather people to watch these films and to talk about them. That's the most important. And during that time, that was, like, back in the early 2000s, it was, like, really, really not like now, where you can just, you know, go on social media, you know, something happened to me, straight away it's on social media. It wasn't like that at all. And the films that we made and the topics that we carried were really, really unique. It's not something that you could find anywhere, you know, and stuff like that. Whereas now, you know, like Malaysia Kini and everything, you just find everybody talking all the time. So that's how it started. Just us wanting to have a platform where people can gather and talk about issues, you know, whether it's ISA or, you know, a dam or an eviction. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's fascinating also because it's been around for almost 20 years, right? It's almost like an archive of, you know, Malaysian history as well, isn't it? Because and also you're giving an alternate view of perhaps what was portrayed in mainstream media. So there is an alternative version of things that actually happened. It's wonderful to have them both side by side, and then people can actually see, you know, what was happening, you know, especially for people like Sharon, who we keep mentioning is so young, you know, an archive of Malaysian history. And what have been some particular highlights for you, you know, for the past 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, just to follow up from what you said, I think the other unique thing that about the festival and one of our kind of good ideas was this film grant. You know, I mean, you won't say about like making films, but there were none. There were none when we started, you know, no activists or no filmmakers were actually making films with this kind of content. So we started this film grant, or, you know, where we would try and help activists or people who want to make a film, you know, about a story about Malaysia to make their film. So like you said, now we have a big collection which available. And when you look back, it's like, wow, okay, that's great, you know. It really is, I would say, the only archive of in film of people's voices of Malaysia, you know. And there are issues that really matter, crucial issues. Yeah.
You know, as you said, Anna, a lot of these films, you know, huge archive of films, many of them, of course, addressing contemporary human rights crises, right? Talk to me about some of the examples of the films that you think have really made a difference.
So when people say make a difference, for me, actually, our films, they really, really make a difference to the affected community. That's one area. Not just tell their story, it actually empowers them. They feel very inspired when they see, like during the festival, they come together, they see the massive support they get, you know, from the audience. They are strengthened also in their, you know, motivation to go further and stuff like that. And that's one of the most important impact of the films that we make, you know. And also, I think films that personally now that I remember, I mean, number one, I feel is the story of Kam Agong. Yeah. So it's a story of a daughter, Agnes Padan, and her mother suffered and died from hemorrhage. It's postpartum. I mean, that means after pregnancy, she had some complications, but there was no hospital nearby, and she couldn't get a doctor that could see to her properly because they were in the interiors, very, very far away in Sarawak. And because of that, she died in the end, and she suffered a lot. And since then, the doctor, like, this is unfair, you know, why is it like that, you know. So after, and they campaign for a hospital in Lawas, this is where the community is, for the longest of time. But then suddenly they came and they were introduced to our festival and film grant, and Lawrence, the husband of Agnes, who also is an activist, said, let's try. And this film really, really, I felt, really brought that issue to the forefront. And they managed to, that time, speak to Dr. Zhu, the Minister of Health, you know. They managed to engage with their community, you know, when they petitioned and said, let's do this for our community. And after the film has finished, Agnes and family has actually moved back to Lawas. They were in KL with their family. They moved back to Lawas. And she's now a health activist in her hometown. And they're looking, working with especially women, Indigenous women, to look at some of the needs that they have. So, and Agnes herself has totally changed. I mean, before, I think her life was, her universe was her husband and, you know, her children. Now she is like, you know, quite a well-known lady in her hometown, you know. And from someone who, you know, was so nervous about speaking out, you know, or doing an interview or saying hello to a stranger, she's now really like talking in public lah. Yeah, so that's amazing, you know. Yeah, and I think the other film I want to mention is maybe a film like The Meniti Senja, which was actually done by Lily Fu, who's in her 70s, you know. So imagine how, you know, you talk about making a difference. At 70 over years old, you are learning a new skill, you know. And Lily has been someone that was championing seniors' rights of the elderly for a long time. But when she made this film, she was aware that she wants to use it as an advocacy tool. But when, and now, you know, after making the film, I can see the impact, you know. She's just kind of run with that film. She's outreached to so many other people that she wants to reach. So all the people she wants to target to reach, right? From policymakers to doctors to whoever. She's just like used the film as a way to outreach to them. And I think she's now been invited to be on this panel, government panel that looks into this elderly policy for the elderly. So in that sense, then for me, that's the impact that I'm talking about. And I think it's really made a difference that way. Yeah.
Definitely. And I had the privilege to speak to both Agnes and Lily, right, on BFM. And it's amazing to see, you know, how something that really bugged them so much, they put it into film and using that, you know, got them a lot of media attention as well, which, you know, helps in these sorts of situations and got them the recognition and the attention that they wanted, right? And that's the power of film, right? Because it really absorbs you into the issue as opposed to just reading it in an article. When you watch it, you get really sucked into the lives of the people that are being portrayed and you really get involved and really involved in the situation. So it's wonderful. Sharon, I'm sorry we've been ignoring you for this past few minutes, but you, of course, are one of the co-founders of Missi Solidarity Malaysia, right? Tell me a little bit about Missi Solidarity. What is the mission of Missi Solidarity?
All right. So Missi Solidarity is a youth collective that fights for every progressive issue under the sun. So our niche is that we don't have a niche. Some of our key driving principles is intersectionality, direct action, and youth power. So our mission is essentially to be a safe space and a platform, particularly for young people who want to get into advocacy, but they don't know how, they don't have the experience, they don't have the skills, they have no idea. We want to be a platform for these people, you know, to collectivize, to educate, to share resources, you know, whether that's advice or experience or ideas or, you know, like-minded people, and to make things happen together, you know, in a space where it is okay to not have skills, it's okay to not know where you're doing, you know, where everyone is continuously learning together and we're working together as equals, right? There's no place for seniority complexes in Missi Solidarity. So we are here to essentially satiate the sentiment of, I feel really angry, I want to do something, and I have no idea where to start, I don't know what to do. So we're here to be a starting point for these people, you know, as the primer says, to give agency to your urgency, right? Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much how it started. It was a bunch of people, me and my three other brilliant co-founders, Victor Revmir, Sarah Edina, and Tiana Chua. So coming together with that feeling of this is what is lacking in the advocacy landscape, and we made it happen together. Yeah.
It's wonderful. And I completely understand, you know, sometimes like everything that's happening around us, you get so angry, you get so frustrated, you don't know how to channel that. And how to channel that in a positive way, I suppose, right? And I guess this is a collective, right? So that you all can just come together just to have a sounding board, just to, yeah, find some solidarity, I suppose, as the name suggests.
Yeah. It's like a safe space for people to be okay with not knowing. Yeah. And then slowly coming to know together with other people.
Mm. And who are the, you mentioned some of your co-founders. Who would you say are the other members of the group? Who are the people who have gravitated towards you guys?
All right. So, I mean, we openly advocate ourselves as the youth org. So the people who come and join us are youths. We are currently about 60 members strong. And all the young people comprise of, you know, maybe teenagers, from teenagers in high school to people in their early 30s. So everyone, because there's no such thing as hierarchy in the organization. So everyone's kind of on the same plane and we work together.
Okay.
Everyone's young.
Okay. All right. So yes, a youth-led movement, of course. And you've actually tackled quite a few different campaigns, in this short time alone, right? You've particular issues actually that you guys have taken up. What are some of the issues that you guys have, really spoken out about?
I would say one of the biggest things that we would be known for is definitely police brutality. Our very first posts that went viral were all on police brutality, essentially covering custodial deaths, really pushing for the IPCMC bill, talking about the IPCMC bill, always covering police misconduct. Another one of our main focuses right now would be Orang Asli land rights. We are currently working with PSM on a land encroachment issue in Pahang, Pos Lanai. So that's that. We also cover other stuff on and off, like HSKL youth, so the Kuala Langat Force Reserve. We're also in a coalition that's helping to push for the land to be gazetted and to not be de-gazetted. I think a myriad of other issues that we touch on and off whenever it's relevant. Yeah, but I think those would be our three main focuses.
Hey, that's a lot for, considering how what a short time you guys have been around. I'm speaking today to Anna Ha. She's the co-founder and executive director of the Freedom Film Network. She's also the festival director of the Freedom Film Festival. And also Sharon Waugh, who is a co-founder of Missy Solidarity, which is a youth-led collective. And we're finding out more about the work that they do, which is all about promoting human rights. And after this quick break, we're going to find out, how maybe, doing this sorts of work does get them into trouble with the authorities as well. That's coming up after this quick break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me today are Anna Ha. She's the co-founder and executive director of the Freedom Film Network. She's also the festival director of the Freedom Film Festival. And Sharon Waugh, who is the co-founder of Missy Solidarity, which is a youth-led collective. And we're finding out more about the work that they do, which we did before the break, right, guys? And, a lot of the work that you do has a lot to do with defending human rights and speaking up about injustice. How did the both of you get drawn into activism as well? Maybe we can start with you, Sharon. Why was, becoming an act? How did you even become an activist? Why was that something in your radar?
Right. Okay. So I think for the longest time, I felt as if I am in a very privileged position. I think I am very financially stable. I am in a position to take risk, essentially. And I think for the longest time, I really wanted to start a collective and start a movement. But I was also at that point where I didn't know how to go about it. And in university, I was extremely lucky enough to meet people who helped to give me something to latch onto and to spur that urge into reality. So those would be my co-founders. So I think MS is the starting point of my advocacy as well. And it's been something that I had dreamed of doing and wanted to create for the longest time and didn't know how. But I was lucky enough to have people to show me how to do that and for me to not do that alone, but together with other people. So yeah, Missy Solidarity is my starting point.
Okay. All right. And Anna, for you, you wanted to make films. You wanted to, you liked Raiders of the Lost Ark. But of course, you activism came along with all of that work that you did do, right? I mean, how was that sort of transition for you? How did you go from filmmaker to becoming an activist as well?
I learned about human rights. The first time I heard about human rights was in uni. We went for some human rights camp. Yeah. I think it wasn't a decision to be an activist. I really had a interest, deep interest in just kind of like, I like la, like going to the community, getting to know them and then being friends. And they're really very inspiring la. That's how I see it. I don't see it's like me doing a job or, fighting for their rights like that. I just really, really, truly enjoy being in their company and being inspired by them. And it's where I choose to be, in that sense. So it's never been work or a chore, But it's just a choice to maybe lead a meaningful life or what I feel like I'll be happy doing. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you've been doing it, like you said, for 20, 30 years now, right? I guess, you know, for Sharon, you're fairly new to this sort of area, right? But, you know, for Anna, you know, have you gotten in trouble or faced any sort of, I guess, let's call it harassment, right, over the years because of the work that you do? Because you're speaking out about things that are, yeah, that can be contentious, right? So, I mean, have you ever, you know, gotten into trouble or anything like that?
Actually, I would say that there's still a lot of space, free space in Malaysia. And the fact that doing this work for this long and the amount of times I got into trouble is actually very, I would say it's acceptable. It's very good. I think, yeah. So yeah, there should be more activists or young people who are not, don't have to be afraid of this, I feel. I mean, of course, the first time, like, you cannot tear gas, like, oh, okay, you know. But it's always like, there'll be other people around with you that, you know, and we just go through it together. That's it, you know. Yeah, I think maybe that word solidarity is very important. That's what I've learned, that always, you know, be in solidarity with people and always also have people around you that, you know, can support you. I think that's the most important. And I think also just believing in yourself and what you're doing, understanding why you're doing what you're doing, and realizing there's consequences, there could be possible consequences to it. Yeah.
And Sharon, I guess, you know, it's something fairly new for you, but, you know, any sort of like bad feedback that you've gotten because you've gotten involved in these sorts of issues, any sort of like negative repercussions from, you know, doing these sorts of work?
I think concretely, no. I think getting investigated by the police this time has been the first time I've ever been put into a position of risk, because before this, I've always kept a fairly low profile. So I just do background, logistical, editorial work. So this is the first time, and I think other negative input, I just choose to not see or hear it. It's expected, though. Like, this is a risk that I took on when I was doing this kind of work. I accepted that when you speak on behalf of justice, this is something that will get into in the way, and you mustn't let this become a fear of yours, because speaking on behalf of justice is necessary, right? So the truth must be spoken, because if it's not you, then it will be somebody else with more risk to take on. So if you have the support systems to do so, then you go and do it. Yeah.
Definitely. And of course, you know, this is definitely a lead on to my next question, which was the fact that both of you were recently questioned by the police. And this was over a short film titled Chili Powder and Thinner, right? And that depicted the alleged torture of a 16-year-old boy while in police lockup. What happened, guys? Tell me what happened. Can you share your experiences? Anna, how about we start with you?
Yeah, okay. It was no different than the work that we usually do, which is just supporting stories that were important and not out, you know, and doing it in film. So we, Swaram is another human rights organization. I mean, we work with them quite a lot. Yeah, and I think 2-3 years ago, we already made a film called Poka Boy. Poka stands for Prevention of Crime Act, I think. And it has an element of detention without trial. And people who are caught in it sometimes have to be put like a ring around them, and they are refrained from going, like, I don't know, 5-10 kilometers from their house. But this boy was like a young boy, still juvenile, and this is a massive, heavy act to have on this, to be imposed on this young boy, you know. So we gathered the stories from there, and then after that, when Pakatan Harapan was in power, Swaram wanted to engage with the police force and the government to talk about reforms, and so they thought that you know, making a film to help them engage would be a good idea. So that's where we came in, and then we produced this film. Yeah, and we didn't release the film for a long time, because the main reason why we made the film wasn't you know, Pakatan Harapan suddenly disappeared or got taken down. Then during this EMCO, the past few months, there was a lot of this death in custody cases coming out. And I think Swaram was also doing this signature campaign to bring about the IPCMC, you know. We thought this would be a good time to finally share this film. And after sharing this film, and having an event, that was when things started to happen. We knew that a reporter who reported on the event got called in for questioning. So we were already quite alerted. But it was still a surprise when they came to my house, to the door and, hello, you know, please come in to Bukit Aman tomorrow. I think in a way that I was privileged enough to have lawyers with me, you know. So we just went through the questioning. And then after that, the surprise was really the rape. And that they would go to this extent, you know, of wanting to raid my office. And then there's a question that, hey, you know, what serious, what are they trying to catch us for? You know, in that sense that they didn't have to go to that extent, I thought. And the fact that it was EMCO, what's the hurry, you know? Are we the biggest threat, you know, to the country at this point, you know? So why, you know, get me and the cartoonists to go all the way to Bukit Aman, you know, wear double masks, you know, get exposed, and then after that, go and raid our houses, Amin's house and the office, you know? It was kind of unnecessary. I mean, that's how I feel personally, yeah.
And, you know, first it was you and the cartoonist, Amin, as you mentioned, both of you were called in for questioning. And then, Sharon, you weren't actually involved in the production of the film at all, but you were also called in for questioning. Am I correct?
Yes.
What happened to you? I mean, what would you like to share about that experience?
So I think the process was more or less the same with Anna. I was also very lucky to have a team of lawyers that were supporting me. And then when we went in, it was just basic questioning. They asked a lot about the film production. Do I know who is in charge of the film? A lot about FFN as well. And it went really smoothly. And a lot of us expected, or we had prepared at least, for our house or office to be raided. And thankfully, that didn't happen. We also got our phones back. So the process itself for us, I think for Matt, Steven, me, and Dr. Kwa, was fairly smooth. So that kind of raises the question of, why did you do this in the first place? You know, it seemed, like as Dr. Kwa said, it seemed like it was an entire waste of time.
Anna, are you guys being charged for anything? I mean, has any charges been brought against you?
Not at this stage. I think they were trying to gather evidence. So me and Amin were the unlucky ones because we got our phones confiscated. And then they also took, a computer from Amin's house. And from my office, they took at least 4 computers plus some equipment and our modems and our routers. And some thumb drive. So, yeah. So I think that was the gathering evidence stage. And I think now they would have to, we just have to wait to see if they would charge us. And then it would be a bit more serious lah. Because if you look at the laws they were investigating us under, there is both a jail term plus a hefty fine. Yeah. So we just have to just gather enough support now, okay, you know, and make people know about this issue. Yeah, I think that's the best we can do for now.
So that's currently kind of where it stands now, right? But that is what I want to know exactly. What would you like the public to know about this incident? What is your message to people out there, you know, about what has happened, over this last week or so?
I think number one, don't shoot the messenger. Not the first time we're making films like that. But you should really just look at the content and investigate that first, you know. And some kind of criticism is always normal if you are in public service, right? And that's number one. Number two is, like, specifically to this case, this call for IPCMC, I think it should be really done. And this case itself shows that, you know, that is a real big need for the independent police complaints and of misconduct commission. It has to be set up somehow so that complaints can be taken in a professional way and everybody feels safe about giving this content, and both the person who reports and the police who, you know, is in question can get a fair and independent hearing. You know, so it protects both sides. I think that too is important. And I think the third is, it's a form of censorship, you know, and fear culture, where if you talk or you speak about something, you really just want to tell other people, sending out a message to other people that not to do that. And it's kind of censorship that shouldn't be done, you know. In this case, like what Sharon said, you know, people need to know about things and you need to find out information. You know? So you should allow people their constitutional right to freedom of expression, to get information, to have, and then have enough information to be able to make good decisions, you know, and then and to take action on whatever you decide, you know. Yeah. It's our right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sharon, what about you?
I would say that there's definitely, the thing about this case is that there's definitely an element of to be made an example of, right? Because, for example, with me, I was barely involved. So the fact that anyone could be put in this position, even with the most minimal of involvement, that sends a message. And second of all, why would being involved in it, in telling the truth, get you investigated in the first place? So that leads up to a message that tells people to put distance with speaking up for others in order to keep yourself safe. And I think I completely understand that that might bring people a lot of fear. And what I would want to tell those people is that we are at a time where you're made to feel as if what you're going through isn't hurting. So you're essentially being gaslighted anytime you try to talk about your needs. And it's because of that that it's all the more important that you do speak up for it, right? Speaking up for the truth, I think, has never been more of a human necessity for survival than it is now, because we are constantly dehumanized every single day. And it's because of this that at this time, we have to show up for each other. And if showing up for each other means that you speak up for the truth, then that is what you do. So don't let this fear get into the way of you showing up for the rakyat and you taking care of us. And all I can say is that we will be here for you. And yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm afraid we're running out of time, but you know, this of course is an important issue. The IPCMC, of course, that is an important issue for, you know, both the organizations that you are with. Any last message that you would like to leave our listeners with regard to that?
I would say that revolution is an act of love. I think that's one of my favorite quotes ever. And we fight because we deserve to be taken care of, and we want that for each other. And we need that right now more than ever. And in this perpetual state of hopelessness, collectively as Malaysian people, it is really important that we have people who will say, you know, we are here for you, and we listen to you, and we see what is wrong, and we are affirming that it is wrong. You know, we see your injustice, we see your tragedy, we want change with you, and we are with you. And in the face of government silence, it's really, really important that we do show up for each other. So I think we need this to feel human, you know, to be reminded that we do matter and that we're worthy. And let us keep showing up for each other and let us keep taking care of each other. Yeah.
Okay. Anna?
No, I totally concur with Sharon, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And, you know, I guess we'll keep in touch and find out, you know, about updates regarding this case. But if anybody would like to get in touch with you, you know, either of you, what's the best way that they can do that? If they'd like to show support for Missy Solidarity or the Freedom Film Network?
So for Missy Solidarity, we have an Instagram page at @msolidarity. We're also on Twitter, also at @msolidarity. So you can reach out to us through those two platforms. We also have a website that you can contact us through, and the link is in our bio for in Instagram and Twitter. So you can just reach out to us through there. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. And Anna, how, if anyone would like to get in touch with the Freedom Film Network?
Yeah, we are on all the social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Just type in Freedom Film Fest, one word. Yeah, and then you can get us through there. And Sharon, maybe a lot of people have seen the film and might want to support our cause. There is that signature campaign for the IPCMCs on change.org, right?
Yes. So we have a petition to sign the IPCMC bill, and we're basically going to use that to really tell the government that this is what the rakyat wants. So if you can, please go to change.org, look for the IPCMC petition called IPCMC Now. So you can go and change, you can go and sign the signature there online. And please do so. Another thing is that Misi Solidarity has also prepared a website where you can send a pressure email with only one click of a button. So again, please go to Misi Solidarity's website and look for the button that says send a pressure email now, and you can send an email to all of the relevant ministers in just 5 seconds. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Anna Ha. She's the co-founder and executive director of the Freedom Film Network, and she's the festival director of the Freedom Film Festival. And also, I've been speaking to Sharon Wah, who is the co-founder of Missy Solidarity, which is a youth-led collective. Just search for them online if you'd like to find out more about the work that they do. And if you missed any part of today's interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, just search for the podcast on the BFM app or at bfm.my/learn. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.